Wadsworth Center, providing comprehensive sexual and reproductive health services to people in northern and eastern Maine since 1984. Insurance, Maine Care, self-pay accepted, and reduced fees for uninsured clients. MabelWadsworth.org.
Yes, I. Reggae music and local lore. Where else it's gotta be? The WEIU drive-thru. Join us, won't you, Wednesday evenings from 8 until 10 p.m. It's 2 hours. We look at roots and culture reggae music with a Down East flair. Kind of like Bob Marley meets Bert and I. A couple hours of bad grammar nestled in around some reggae music. Hey, we're hoping you're going to join us each and every Wednesday evening on your community radio station. Just visiting? Got friends here from away? You can take us home with you no matter where you live. Live on the web, streaming weru.org.
Support for WERU comes from our listeners and from Oak Hill Marine Design, a naval architecture firm in Southwest Harbor specializing in commercial vessels under 70 feet in length in fiberglass and aluminum, as well as computer lofting and United States Coast Guard documentation of passenger vessels. More information at oakhillmarinedesign.com.
You're listening to WERU-FM 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and streaming at weru.org. We are a voice of many voices, we're volunteer-powered, and we're listener-supported. Stay tuned for Power for the People.
Good morning. This indeed is Power for the People here on WERU. My name is Steve Call, your host for the next hour. This is indeed a call-in program. And we have a very practical topic today. It's the topic of heat pumps, but we'll get into that here in just a second. So Power for the People is a program helping Mainers take control of your energy future and your energy budgets as well. And again, a very practical topic today. It's always good to follow Mike in the Barefoot Blues Hour for the drive into the studio. Again, the rather unusual format rare format for WERU. So just a quick update. Next month, we have Suzanne McDonald from the Island Institute talking about energy projects out on Maine Islands. Energy is a challenge out there and typically expensive. And I sure like to think that we're moving towards having some energy-independent islands. And with a little bit of luck, we'll have a program on insulation options in December. So today, my guest is Adam Barker-Hoyt from MAC Heat Pumps in Bangor, Maine. Again, the topic being heat pumps, one of the most practical things that anybody can do to lower their costs and get off of fossil fuels. Adam is the founder and CEO of Mac Heat Pumps up in Bangor again. He, interestingly, has degrees in math and philosophy from the University of Maine. An interesting combination, and as a piece that I saw on the UMaine website says, those were kind of important majors for you to be a customer-focused company up there. So it's MAC Heat Pumps. I met Adam at the Sustain Mid-Maine annual meeting, and we talked about coming on the program at that point. Let me, with that incredibly brief introduction, tell me a little bit more about yourself, and then tell me a little bit more about the company.
Yeah, sure, Steve. Thanks. I appreciate this opportunity here. Thanks so much. I got my undergraduate degrees in mathematics and philosophy here at UMaine Orono and got my master's in math there. I taught for the university for 7 years and has been really interested in terms of climate change and environmental concerns and that sort of thing. So basically, after doing research and talking to mechanical engineers at UMaine Orono, came to the conclusion that these heat pumps are the most cost-effective way of reducing CO2 emissions here in Maine. And so that's why I've basically dedicated my professional career and my life towards this pursuit here. So basically, I've always been a Mainer, and I don't want to leave the state, and so I was trying to find something that I could do for Mainers here in Maine. And so I started this business installing, servicing heat pumps, and I feel like that's the way of the future here.
So how many people do you have working for the company?
We have, I believe it's 14 team members there total.
And you started probably just as a one-person shop, did you?
Yeah. Me and my wife, we would working out of my trailer there, my mobile home. We'd borrow our a truck from my father-in-law, go and pick up the material from the shop or from the warehouse, whatnot. Sorry, the supply shop, and go out to the job, put the unit in, then come back, load all the stuff back up into our trailer, and then return the truck. And so it was basically one man show, buying everything off our credit card at first.
Mm-hmm. When was that? When were you founded?
That was in 2011.
Okay.
Professor Dick Hill, some of your listeners might recognize the name. He was our first customer. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know Dick well. I was in the same building with him there for many years, and I see John the engineer nodding that he knew him as well, no doubt. And which reminds me to say there's actually 5 degrees from the University of Maine sitting here in this room.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of cool. So since 2011, you've grown to 14 people.
Yeah.
And that's a reflection of the importance of heat pumps. And by the way, I do have a heat pump, one that was put in, I guess it was 2 years ago. I didn't actually have the whole winter that first year. But just to put an exclamation point on what we're talking about here in terms of the opportunities for homeowners, last winter when I did have it for the whole year, I reduced my heating oil consumption by 90%. That's 90. That's part of the opportunity for how we can deal with this. You know, you look at the numbers, and last time I saw the numbers, Mainers are sending something like $4 billion a year out of state to out-of-state fossil fuel companies. And heat pumps offer the opportunity to save, well, let's just in round numbers say $1 billion. If we're getting on board with those things.
Right.
And it's interesting how many people still don't really know what they are. I had somebody come up to me the other day and say, so a heat pump is going to cost me 10 or 15 grand. How am I going to decide whether I want to do that or not? And in fact, that's way, way too high. They're actually very cost effective. And we will probably say that there's rebates coming out of Efficiency Maine as well. But let's start all the way back at the beginning for the audience to make sure we don't get ahead of anybody. Tell us describe what a heat pump is.
Sure. So a heat pump does heating, air conditioning, and acts as a dehumidifier. These mini-split heat pumps, there's all kinds of different heat pump technology. A lot of people might have heard of ground source heat pumps or geothermal heat pumps, where they basically steal heat from the ground and move it inside your house to heat your space there. Then there's water source that move heat from the water to your house there. And the ones that we work with are air-sourced heat pumps. And they're a little less efficient than the ground source and the water source heat pumps, but the initial cost is much cheaper. You're looking at between $3,000 and $5,000 for a single unit installed, which can typically do, 80-90% of a standard household's heating load. So,
And one thing that people always talk about is that, first of all, they're quiet. An air source heat pump is quiet. I might add that the ground source ones that I've experienced are not that quiet, and they are phenomenally more expensive. But they both work on the same principle. They're moving. People describe them both as being 300% efficient, and people go, well, wait a minute, how is that even possible? And the issue is that they're not making heat like your boiler is. They're just moving heat around.
Right. Yeah, so it's refrigeration technology. If you've ever felt the back of your fridge, you can feel the heat coming out of the back of your fridge. So it's basically moving heat from inside your fridge to outside your fridge, from a cold place to a warm place. So the same thing here in that even though it's cold outside, there's all this heat to claim, and so we take it from the outside and put it inside where we want it. So the way we do this, maybe it might be useful just for a little bit of the technology. I love to talk about how it works and that sort of stuff. Basically, it's through heat transfer in the refrigerant. So basically, we make the refrigerant outside colder than the outdoor air. So relative to the outdoor air feels warm. So get this really cold refrigerant, and we run it through coils, blow a fan over it, and absorb the heat from the outside air into the refrigerant. Then we move that refrigerant inside, make it warmer than the indoor air. Again, run it through coils, blow a fan over it, and reject that heat indoors. Now, the question people sometimes ask is, well, how do we change the temperature of the refrigerant? Well, it basically comes down to the ideal gas law, and that the pressure, the volume, the amount of gas, and the temperature are related in a certain manner. But all we care about is that as the pressure goes up, the temperature goes up. So you want to make the refrigerant warmer, we apply pressure to it. You want to make it colder, we make it so there's less pressure on it. And so we basically cycle this refrigerant around from outside to inside in a continuous loop, changing the pressure of the refrigerant at various points in time to be able to move heat from one place to another. That's all regulated through mechanical devices via electricity, i.e. the heat pump.
Right. And again, as you just said, it's exactly how your refrigerator works. And you can, your refrigerator doesn't work in both directions, but a heat pump does work in both directions. And so it can give you heating at 300% efficiency, or it can give you AC at what I've seen is like 30% more efficient than your typical window air conditioner.
They're actually saying more than twice efficient, twice as efficient,
right.
In fact.
Oh, yeah. Is that right? Yeah, than a window AC?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
all right. Well, that's great to know. And I love that you mentioned the ideal gas law, having been a former high school chemistry teacher back in the day. So always good to work a little chemistry into the equation. And just to make sure that we don't miss this point, an air source heat pump or heat pumps are electric.
Yes. The ones we work with. I believe there are other ones out there that say run off propane and that sort of stuff, but the ones that are really getting popular here in Maine and around the world, and the ones we work with are electric.
Right. And then the other thing is, people may say, well, yeah, you can take heat from outside, but it gets cold here occasionally in the state of Maine. Tell us about the temperature range at which these things operate.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so it was up till about 2008, pretty much, these heat pumps wouldn't work in our climate, you know, because they'd shut off about 32 degrees outside. And like, well, who cares up here? But with the introduction of R410A refrigerant, which is a high-pressure refrigerant, and the introduction of variable speed technology, we can now extract heat at extremely low temperatures and do it efficiently. And so the heat pumps that are typically installed around here are rated down to -5, -15, and the ones that we work with, they're putting out heat down below -20.
Exactly right, and that is important. And there's an interesting history here. In case you think this is a brand new technology that you're afraid to put in your own home, heat pumps have been around for decades, but used down south, not up here. And then actually a Maine company did the tweaks on the technology to get them to work in cold temperatures. And so we call these cold climate heat pumps that we're installing here in the state of Maine.
The other ones, the ones that you're referring to, that other company there, they've unfortunately went out of business because they didn't put enough development time into the technology there. They're a small company, so they obviously didn't have the resources to be able to do that. But they put the product out before it was ready. And the product was so complicated that once they failed, no standard service technician could fix it. So, unfortunately, that was a bad apple in a sense.
But well, they were the pioneers, but gave us the transition to the cold climate heat pump. Again, we'll open up the phones here in just a second for any questions, but we'll continue to talk about how a homeowner could make these types of choices. I do want to come back to your comment earlier on about air source heat pumps versus geothermal. The kind of the common phrase. My mind, geothermal is the wrong phrase. Geothermal terms refers to something that would happen in Yellowstone, whereas we are talking about ground source or water source heat pumps because the ground has a temperature of 50 degrees plus or minus year round. And so that is probably the reason that ground source heat pumps are more efficient is that they have that advantage that they're not trying to take heat out of 15 degree below air.
Right, correct. Yeah, the efficiency of a heat pump is dependent on the delta T, the difference between the indoor temperature and the outdoor temperature. If that's really big, it's harder to move the heat. You know, it's really cold outside. It's hard to extract the heat from out there. It takes a little bit more work. When if it's not as cold outside, it's easier to do. So if you can minimize that delta T, as you do with ground source heat pumps, then you get a more efficient unit, basically.
Right. Yeah. Is there a something that homeowners need to know about which brands perhaps can go to 5 below versus 20 below?
Yeah, you do want to be careful in terms of your expectations for these particular heat pumps, because definitely different brands will peter out, I guess, once it gets cold outside. You know, if you look in the design technical manuals and see what the actual heating output is at various outdoor temperatures, there is a big difference in the brands. And that's why we tend to work with Fujitsu more, is because it puts out more heat at those lower temperatures.
Right. And the major brands that are out there are? Fujitsu is one?
Yeah, Fujitsu is the one that started right here in Maine. Or, I mean, not didn't start in Maine, but was got big first when heat pumps started to get big here in about 2013 or so. But there's also Mitsubishi and Daikin are big competitors here as well.
And you did mention 2008 as kind of being the break for when this technology came along. It is relatively recent, but again, it's not brand new technology. It's just tweaked technology.
Right, exactly. Heat pumps have been around almost as long as refrigerators have been around. But again, as we said there, you know, they were using them down south, but they'd peter out. They wouldn't work at low temperatures, you know, and that's really important up here.
Right.
So basically the R410A refrigerant, which is the high pressure refrigerant there, allows us to extract heat at extremely low temperatures.
Right. And what was the question I was just going to ask? Sorry about that. I guess I had a brief pause here, so I'm not sure what I was going to ask. I'll think of it in a minute. But let me just say that the phone number here, if you want to call in and ask about heat pumps, and again, this is just such an opportunity to reduce your heating bill. The phone number is 866-625-9378, and that is 866-625-WERU. And so this is Power for the People at 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and at WERU.org in the entire solar system. And I know about that because I teach planetary science. So it's definitely available everywhere in the solar system. So let's work through the process. A homeowner calls you up, and what kind of typical questions do they ask, and how do you go about giving them advice in terms of what they ought to do?
Yeah, so a typical question is, well, will this replace my existing system? And the answer to that is definitely no, for most cases. Basically, as it gets colder outside, the heat pumps put out less heat. And so at some point in time, the heat pump isn't going to put out as much heat as is required to keep you comfortable for most situations. And so that's why we recommend that you keep your existing system as a backup, just to fill in the gaps during those coldest days of the year. Just to give you an idea of how few days you really need a backup here in Maine, on average, if you run the numbers using historical weather data and checking out the bin data, there's if you count up the number of hours when it's below 5 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, so an hour here, an hour there, there's less than 10 days worth of hours when it's below positive 5. But there's hundreds of days.
Below negative 5, you mean?
Positive 5.
Oh, positive 5.
Positive
okay.
5. Yeah, less than 10 days on average. But there's hundreds of days when it's above positive 5. And so that's really where you're targeting with the heat pump, you know, for those 200 days of heating requirement. And then those 5 days or 10 days when it's below positive 5, then maybe use your oil backup or your wood stove or whatever to fill in the gaps. And that's the best way to basically utilize the strengths of these various heating technologies, because your oil or your wood has a lot of BTUs capacity that can put out a lot of heat, and you've got a good storage capacity. You can just keep it sitting down in the basement or whatever and use it as you need it, while the heat pump can provide a nice, even, steady heat and extremely cheap. You know, so the idea is that utilize each's strengths to be able to minimize your operating costs and maximize your comfort.
Right. And in my own case, having installed one heat pump back in 2015, I'm going to be putting in another one within the next month or two for kind of the other half of my house, if you will. And I've left the 1848 boiler in my basement there, but I frankly haven't added in, bought any oil this year, and I don't plan to. And so I think the heat pumps will handle, again, 95% of my heat load this year. And then I'll augment that with a wood stove. And that'll be my backup. There is, this may be an opinion question, so we can debate this one a little bit. Your answer relative to a homeowner with an existing house from a moment ago is correct, that you do need to have some backup just in case something happens.
Most cases, yeah.
Right.
I mean, but my place, for example, I'm able to get away with just one heat pump. I've got a 1,100 square foot ranch, And, you know, I just like to try to push the heat pump as much as I possibly can, see what it can do, you know. So when it was a negative 20 there, I live up in Brewer, by the way, so just so you have the listeners have an idea of my climate. When it was about negative 20 there for an extended period of time, it got down to about 59 degrees in my kitchen, which was further away from the heat pump, but we just put on a blanket, you know, so we were good. So we can get away with it, but, you know, not everyone's going to be comfortable at 59 degrees, and so you do kind of want to have something to fill in the gaps to achieve the comfort level desired.
Right. We're a pair of nerdy energy people here, and so yeah. we do try to push the envelope. That's right. So again, a reminder, the relative to the phone numbers, 469-0500 or 866-625-9378. We're talking with Adam Barker Hoyt here about heat pump technology and the opportunities for people to save big money. And as I said a few minutes ago, I reduced my oil bill by 90%. So on the retrofit side, if you've got a heating system there already, you bring in a heat pump, you're going to greatly reduce your heating bill, because a heat pump costs, in round numbers, half the price, half the cost of running a fossil fuel device. If you're going to new construction, though, my personal opinion is that there's no reason that you can't put in, you know, a couple of heat pumps, whatever, depending on the size of your house. And then your backup there could be some electric resistance heat in your bathrooms or something like that, because that's so cheap to install, and you're probably going to use it 3 hours a year or 5 hours a year or something like that.
Yes, definitely. That's Herbert Crosby, who's a mechanical engineer up at UMaine Orono. He actually asked that question, you know, what's the best way for a new construction here? And he came to that exact conclusion there, that the best way for a new construction to minimize your operating costs and your initial cost is to put in heat pumps, do the majority, and a little bit of electric baseboard to fill in the gaps.
Right. So we do have our first caller, Catherine from Sabatis. You are on the air.
Good morning. I have two questions. The first one is regarding sizing, how one figures out what size system to get. And the other question is it better to have two separate systems or to use a split system for two zones?
Perfect questions. Thank you very much. Let's go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. My background's in mathematics, so I like to do a lot of analysis and research and whatnot. And so when we size it as a company, we try to size it for economics, and we do it based on the numbers. So for us, when we run the numbers using historical weather data here in Maine, the design and technical manuals for the various units under various conditions, one particular model comes out on top in terms of heating savings. So that's one we tend to recommend for most situations. That being said, it is important to size these things appropriately. Contrary to what most people seem to believe, as far as I've seen, is that you want to undersize as opposed to oversize. It's very important for many, many reasons. So when we size it as a company, we try to size it for economics. And so that's how we size it for ourselves. Different people have different, you know, things they're trying to do. You know, a lot of people these days are sizing it for the air conditioning need, say, but it really comes down to a more individualized approach. But the basic idea is you want to undersize as opposed to oversize to be able to minimize your operating cost and your initial cost and to achieve the higher level of comfort. Really, the big reason why you do that is due to short cycling. You don't want this huge heat pump in a tiny space, for example, that's turning on and off all the time, because you're going to reduce the efficiency of the unit for one. You know, you can kind of compare it to, you know, in your car. If you're slamming on the gas and slamming on the brake, you're going to be less efficient as opposed to having a nice even speed there. And so you have better gas mileage, say, you know, so you'd have a better efficiency with the heat pump. But the big thing is in terms of the air conditioning side is that if you're turning on and off all the time, well, when you're air conditioning, you're taking moisture out of the air, and that moisture accumulates on the coils and the fins of the inside unit of the heat pump. Well, if it's turning on and off all the time, well, it's on, it gets that moisture out of the air, and then it turns off. That moisture re-evaporates back into the air. And so instead of a nice air-conditioned feeling, you get a cold, clammy feeling. And so you don't want to have that. So that's why it's important to undersize. And remind me, what was the second question?
Let's just finish the sizing there. So if somebody is going to do Well, tell me how many square. I mean, generalize on how many square feet a heat pump might do.
Typically, the most common model we put out there, the 12RLS3, does about 1,000-1,500 square feet.
And that would be a 12,000 BTU model, perhaps?
Yeah. And that 12,000 note has to do with the air conditioning capacity. The heating capacity for that particular model is significantly higher compared to the air conditioning.
So the BTU is based on AC sizing. All right.
Right.
I didn't
know
that.
That tends to be, the way to go.
All right. So if somebody has kind of your typical 1,000-square-foot first floor and they want to put a heat pump in there, then depending on how many walls and how chopped up it is, one heat pump could do it.
Yes.
Or it could potentially be two, I suppose. I mean, her second question was how many.
The split system, the multi-zone system versus multiple single-zone systems.
Right.
Right. So these air-sourced heat pumps, they're all split systems, meaning that they're mini-split, meaning they're mini, they're small, and split, meaning they're split between an indoor unit and an outdoor unit. Your standard window shaker air conditioner is a single unit. It's not split between an inside and an outside. So that's what we're talking about in terms of split. Now, I think the question here has to do with in terms of multi-zoned units, where you have multiple inside units off of one outside, versus multiple single-zone units where you have one inside unit to each outside unit. Now, the engineering's different for different units and different brands and whatnot, but typically it comes down to that the multi-zoned units are less efficient than the single-zoned units. And typically you don't save too much on the initial cost for the multi-zone versus multiple single-zoned units. And any savings you do get is eaten up in higher operating costs in just a couple few years. That being said, there's all kinds of little details and specifics for a specific situation. So I'd have to, look at the actual numbers to really come to a conclusion. But that's a general conclusion right there, that the single-zoned units are going to be a better, bigger bang for your buck.
And you mentioned
in the multi-zone units, are you limited on size so that you would get more a larger unit if you had two single units than if you did the one with the two inside units?
I don't quite understand your question there.
I guess you say it'll do 1,000 to 1,500 square feet. So if you had one exterior unit outside and then you had two inside from that one exterior, is that limited on size where you could get two larger units where they separate? Does that make sense?
You can, yes. Yeah. So if you're going to have two inside units, I believe I understand your question here. Those two inside units, say, can be small or they can be big. And if they're, big, then that's going to dictate how big the outside unit has to be. So basically, go for it.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, not a problem.
And part of the issue is, as it's been explained to me, that, so first of all, you mentioned a few minutes ago that the range of prices is around $3,000 to something in excess of $5,000. That would be a single mini split at the low end and a double unit at the other end. So you would save a little bit of money by putting in, if you wanted to, by putting in the single split. The single outside unit and the double split inside. But again, as you made the point, that's a little less efficient. The other potential downside there is if there is a problem with the unit, you lose both inside units rather than having independent mini splits. And I'm going with a second unit at my place for kind of that latter reason. We have another caller on the line, David from Wayne. Hopefully you're still there.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, recently we've installed photovoltaic panels on our house, and we have a 7-kilowatt system. And what I wanted to do is use that extra electricity to, run a heat pump of some sort. And originally I was thinking of doing the mini split only, but then we also have a propane hot water heater that needs to be replaced. So I discovered they have hot water heat pumps now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, are those efficient enough to actually use to heat our house? We have radiant heat as well. So
you're asking, can a hybrid, the heat pump hot water heater, also called a hybrid hot water heater,
yeah,
can that be used to run your radiant heat?
Right.
You know, that's a question that I have sure wondered about, so I'm thrilled you asked the question. I have no idea whether Adam's going to know the answer to that.
And which is more efficient, the mini split or the hot water?
Well, yeah, that's a little bit of an apples and oranges question, but we'll come back to that in a second.
Okay. So.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of different heat pump technology out there. And I know that there's heat pumps out there that can run and feed your radiant heat and that sort of thing. But I believe that's separate from what you are referring to and that the heat pump hot water heater. Typically, the heat pump hot water heater is a standalone system that has the heat pump technology built into the tank itself. And so its sole purpose is to heat your hot water. And then that doesn't tie into your radiant system.
It's not made to do that.
Correct. Not most of those systems. There are systems out there that can do that, but that's a separate type of system. It's definitely a lot more costly.
Well, and my 2 cents worth on it is that certainly there are people out there, many people out there, who are heating their radiant with a hot water heater, all right, be it gas or electric. So theoretically, a hybrid hot water heater could do that. But the trick would be, and I don't think either one of us are expert enough to answer this question, remember that a hybrid hot water heater is actually extracting heat from your basement or wherever you have it.
Right.
So if you assume it's in the basement and you're continuing to get 50 degree heating from the surrounding ground, that could work. But if there's a big demand there, conceivably you could lower the temperature in your basement and that could be a problem.
All right. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I'd love to see is solar hot water assist to a hybrid hot water heater, which means that 9 months of the year you'd use no electricity whatsoever. And in the wintertime, maybe you'd use a little bit of electric, but I haven't seen that one out there yet. At this point, you'd need to have a separate heat exchanger to feed into that hybrid hot water heater. But it's a great question.
Okay, yeah.
And by the way, you're our celebratory expert or specialist of the day in terms of having solar on your roof and thinking about heat pumps. Did you have a specific question about heat pumps in general in terms of, it sounded like you were kind of asking about that too, not the hybrid hot water heater, but the heat pump and solar combination?
I also have like a shop, and I think what I'm going to end up doing is probably installing two. You know, one in my house and one in the shop. So.
Okay, and you do have extra electricity, so that you'll be able to get free fuel for those. Is that right?
Yeah, right. We have about I think 4,000 extra kilowatts that we're probably not going to use.
No, that's probably plenty for a heat pump.
I think I could actually increase the efficiency of my lighting and actually get a little more, but. I think that's probably going to be enough. I don't know.
No, that's the calculation I've done at my house. It's probably a little more than enough.
It is? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. That's good.
That's great. Well, and I'll just comment the...
So I'll probably get the hot water heater as well then, because our propane use is going up with, the hot water heater we have is getting less efficient, I think, all the time. And,
right. Well,
to get rid of it.
if you have the opportunity because a fossil fuel device is on its last legs, the hybrid hot water heater makes a ton of sense. Remember, they run 75% more efficiently than a regular hot water heater. So, in my case, I'm figuring that I'm spending maybe $5 a month extra for my hybrid hot water heater, in part because I run it in heat pump mode only rather than the hybrid mode, which includes electric backup. And so you have that option.
Oh, you do have that option.
At least on some of the models, you have that option.
Which models do you know?
Oh, what the heck brand? If you call the station and leave a message with the engineer, I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
I can't remember which brand it is off the top of my head.
Okay, great.
And just to comment, I don't know if you guys did this work or not, but the governor installed, as I understand it, 23 heat pumps in the Blaine House.
Yeah.
And if only he believed in solar, we could get the Blaine House completely off of the tax rolls. But that's another story.
He is a contradiction, isn't he?
Yeah, right. All right, well, thanks so much for the call, David.
Okay, thank you.
Here's another question as I just jot down random notes as we talk about things. AC mode is one of the features for heat pumps. If you believe, being a Mainer, that you use AC, I'm a Mainer who doesn't believe in AC, but I do occasionally put it in dry mode. Am I correct that dry mode is going to be more efficient than full AC mode?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah. And I have to say, I mean, dry mode, I guess I have a relatively small living room, but it works great. I mean, it cools things down, and I've yet to put it into AC mode. I just use dry.
Yeah, a lot of people here in Maine, you know, because we have such a humid climate, you know,
right.
A lot of our customers there just do the dry mode.
I mean, the only time it's uncomfortable is when it is humid, so that's certainly glad to hear that is correct. All right, so let's kind of follow up on Catherine's call. So somebody calls you up and says they're interested in heat pumps. What kind of questions do you ask them on the phone that somebody can anticipate an installer asking?
Well, I mean, basically, you know, there's different reasons why people would want a heat pump, but usually it's for cost savings here in Maine or sometimes air conditioning. And so we just basically get an idea of what their situation is and to see if this would be applicable to them. If you have a house that's nice and open, open concept, then heat pumps are a really good option. But if you have a house that's really broken up with all kinds of doors and walls and that sort of thing, then it's tougher to get away with heat pumps there, depending on the situation.
Right. And my case is actually similar to that. I mean, I literally have an 1,100 square foot house, but I am putting a second heat pump in there because I do have a lot of small rooms. And I think that'll work fine at that point. One of the questions that maybe the second caller was kind of getting at, but it didn't come out specifically. If somebody wants to replace an oil boiler or a fossil fuel boiler of some kind that also produces hot water and they want to go to a heat pump, that's a potential issue that they need to think about how they're going to make that transition and still maintain hot water. You want to comment on that a little bit?
Not sure.
So if hot water is coming off their boiler, meaning that the boiler is going to run regularly, then the heat pump is going to cause that boiler to run less. I mean, obviously, if they're demanding hot water, the boiler can still run. But it relates to, in my case, since I didn't want the boiler to continue to run because I didn't want to use fossil fuels, I installed the hybrid hot water heater. So people might be thinking about those kinds of questions.
Right, right. And actually, that is one you do bring up an important point. It's important that you know that if you shut off your boiler for an extended period of time, for years, it can create issues with your heating system there. So right. You want to manually run it every once in a while if you're not using it at all.
Right.
I'm not sure. I can't remember the details, particulars, but I know that there's like issues in terms of oil and stuff that can create issues if it's not run.
Well, I mean, the lifetime for the efficient lifetime for a gallon of oil is something like 18 months. So there's one of the issues.
Then
you've also got the issue of whether the thing will even start and whether there's
Right.
stuff accumulating in the pipes, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I would have reduced my oil consumption by 95% if I didn't run my boiler occasionally just for that very reason.
Right.
So that's a good one there. All right, so let's see. What else? So we've talked about expectations of savings. By the way, we didn't yet get to the fact that there are rebates from Efficiency Maine. And if you go to efficiencymaine.org, you can find information if you look around in the home heating section, if you're talking about home heating. For the first zone, it's $500. For the second zone, it's $250.
Yep.
You want to just comment again on how zones are defined and how those rebates work, and also how you or most vendors would operate relative to the paperwork for Efficiency Maine?
Right, yeah. So there's a fair amount of paperwork, not too bad, but there's definitely some technical paperwork that has to be filled out for this rebate. But basically, the first zone, second zone refers to the number of inside units. So if you had two single-zoned units, so you have two inside units, each fed by their own outside unit, then you'd qualify for $500 and $250, total of $750 worth of rebates. If you had a multi-zoned unit that has two inside units off of one outside unit, again, you'd qualify for $750. So it just basically has to do with the number of inside units, and only the first two qualify for rebates there.
Right.
Now note, that's only for residential. Commercial has its own structure there. And there you can get as many rebates as you want.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
let me just mention another thing from personal experience. I did a retrofit project on a commercial building back when I lived in New Hampshire. This was up in the foothills of the White Mountains, so, you know, similar or even tougher climate than southern Maine, for example. And we actually wrote a proposal to the Department of Energy saying that we were going to put solar on the roof. We were going to use an air source heat pump for this building. And our goal, and we were going to insulate it, super insulate it, and our goal was to get to net zero energy for this building. And believe it or not, the folks from the Department of Energy actually replied saying, we like this idea that you're not doing City Hall, because that's what a lot of their proposals were, they were getting were, that you're going to doing a smaller commercial building that people are going to be able to relate to. But doing a net zero energy retrofit in New England, no way. Can't get it done. Well, bottom line is that building has generated 4 megawatt hours, 4,000 kilowatt hours more than it has used since we did that project in 2012. So the solar is running the air source heat pump. The building was electrically heated and used like $4,000 a year of electricity. It has not had an electric bill, obviously. In New Hampshire, the PUC actually lets the utility pay people back for the excess that they've used, unlike Maine. We have a less than progressive PUC here, as we've seen recently. But the other part of it, so it was electrically heated with radiant heat. They've not turned the heat on in 4 years. Or I guess it's 5 years now. And the other thing that the people say is, it's so comfortable, and which is a combination of the insulation and the air source heat pumps. So it's just an example of the success stories that are possible out there. So this is Power for the People here on WERU. My guest is Adam Barker-Hoyt from MAC Heat Pumps in Bangor, and we are talking about all things heat pumps here. The phone number, if you want to give us a buzz for... A question is 866-625-9378 or 469-0500.
I just had a quick question, Steve, because I think people might be wondering, when you're using these systems, there's an indoor and an outdoor. Are you getting any outdoor air through the indoor?
No, there's no actual air transfer from the inside to the outside. Basically, you're just recirculating the inside air, heating it up or cooling it down.
Right. Thank you, John. That's an important question. And I was going to ask, again, just to let people know, where logically you put the outside unit on their house, because that is something that people need to think about in terms of potentially appearance or where the snow falls, that sort of thing. What are the issues there that people need to think about?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of details there. Aesthetics is a huge thing. People don't want that unit on the front of their house, so we try to make sure we get creative in terms of locating it so it's less visible and whatnot. We do want to have it up high enough so the snow doesn't build up into it, or at least so you're not needing to shovel underneath it all the time. So typically we mount it right to the wall via L-shaped brackets high enough so the snow doesn't build up into it, but that does have a chance of transmitting a vibration noise to the adjacent room inside. So we do have another more expensive option where we can mount it to the ground. We basically level the ground, put down some gravel, a cement slab or pad, and then a 2-foot steel stand that we mount that to the pad there. And that's where we put the outside unit. And that eliminates any chance of a vibration noise being transmitted inside.
Right. And that can potentially be an issue. I have heard of at least one company that uses brackets that actually bolt to your cement foundation. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. They're the inverted brackets. We use those as well, but you definitely... have to have the right foundation. You know, a lot of the foundations just aren't big enough, or you know, don't pull it up high enough so that the snow doesn't build up into it. So
yeah, I would think the height would be a big issue on that one.
Yeah.
So a homeowner calls you up and you've talked about the sizing and the details of it, and maybe you even have you've got an accepted quote. What does the homeowner need to think about in terms of the day of installation? How long does it take? That sort of thing.
Yes, so for us, you know, this is all we do, so we get pretty efficient at it. All our installers have installed over 1,000 units there, so we do it pretty quick, relatively speaking, I should think. But for us, it's about half a day per unit.
Okay, and what happens then? What does the homeowner have to do? Who's drilling what holes through the walls and those sorts of things?
Yeah, we get an installation team, an electrician team. And so the day of the install, they show up. We like to have the homeowner there so that everyone's on the same page, everything goes smoothly. And the install team, the refrigeration team, they basically mount the inside unit and the outside unit. They drill a hole through the wall, 2 5/8 inch in diameter. That's where all the piping and wiring go through. And they connect the inside unit to the outside unit via that piping and wiring. And on the outside, typically, we run the piping down to the outside unit on the exterior wall, and we cover that up with a gutter-like material. So it looks like you have a gutter running down your house. And then the outside unit connects to a disconnect box, which is just a small gray box that's located right next to it. Just by code, you know, you need to have a way to be able to shut it off real quick. And then that connects to your electrical panel via 220 there, electrical. So and it has its own breaker, typically a 15-amp two-pole breaker.
And the hole that you're drilling, following up on John, the engineer's comment of a moment ago, is not for airflow. It's for the refrigerant tubing and for electrical.
Right. As we talked about before, the refrigerant's moving from the outside to the inside, and so it travels along in those pipes. You know, there's one, a bigger one, and a smaller one to create a loop. And so that that's what that's doing right there. And we seal up that hole with spray foam and that sort of stuff, so there isn't any sort of air transfer or any leakage and that sort of stuff.
Right. And then the other thing, just to make sure that we've mentioned, is that you want to put these units on the gable end of the house rather than underneath the eaves practical reasons.
Yeah, if you're going to put them under the eaves, you know, there's definitely certain restrictions. You know, you can't be within 10 feet of propane by code, you know, just due to safety issues and that sort of stuff. So, I mean, you're limited sometimes in terms of where you put it. So sometimes you do have to have it not under the gable end. And if you do, you need to have it protected from rain. And so there's little rain caps that we can install right on the unit that deflects the rain from instead going in behind the unit to deflect it out front. Because basically, the unit's fine to get rained on normally, but if you have the tip of the roof where you get all kinds of rain coming down on it, and it's between 30 and 45 degrees outside, it'll pull that water in, freeze it, and create an ice chunk that seizes up the fan. So these rain caps are meant to deflect it out the front so it doesn't pull it inside the unit itself.
You certainly, depending on the slope of the roof and the particular snow year, you can see a good deal of snow on under the eaves. Is that an issue where you could get it buried in a snowbank?
Well, yeah, that's what we got to be watching out for as well.
Right.
You know, so we have to run it by the homeowner has to give us some information too, you know, because you know, we don't know what it's like to live there and how the snow builds up and all that sort of stuff. So that's part of the process in terms of placing the unit. You know, we need to make sure that we're on the same page and we don't put it in a place where it's going to be buried with snow every year, you know, because no one's happy then.
Right. And one thing that we talked about earlier is, and I actually think you weren't so sure that I was telling the truth on this one, but it seems to me that having the outside unit on the north side versus the south side would be a little bit of an efficiency issue.
There's no difference as far as I've heard from multiple channels. So basically, because it just has to do with the delta T again, you know, the difference between the indoor and the outdoor. So it's the ambient temperature of the air outside. The coils and fins aren't exposed to the sun. You know, they're buried inside this machine. And so having the sun coming down on it or whatnot, it's not going to make a big difference. And also in terms of flow, you know, in terms of currents within your house and that sort of stuff, there's virtually no difference. And so it's more about locating the inside unit where you're going to be able to utilize the capacity. You know, you don't want it to be in a closet or say, you know, you want it in the nice open space that you are most often, you know, kind of treat it like a wood stove, but not as extreme, turning it up a bit to get heat to drift the rest of the house. So you first locate the inside unit where it's most useful, then you can locate the outside unit accordingly, trying to minimize the distance between the two if possible, but also looking out for these other issues.
But in fact, you actually can run a refrigerant line 100 feet or more if need be.
Right. There's different models, and they have different restrictions and that sort of thing. The most popular residential models here that we work with are about 66 feet maximum, but there are units made for more commercial size, can run up over 200 feet distance.
And back to the question about sizing that our first caller had. I think the smallest unit that I'm aware of is like a 9,000 BTU unit, and the mini splits go to what, 18 or 24,000?
Yeah, the smallest single zone is 9,000,
okay.
But there are multi-zoned units that can run a 7,000 inside unit off it. In terms of the maximum size, you know, we just put in a 30 the other day in this nice huge house there, huge room, 30,000 BTU unit.
Is that a mini-split single unit?
Yeah, mini-split single unit. The outside unit, though, was kind of like having two stacked on top of each other. They had two fans there.
Oh, okay, so that one is a double unit.
Yeah, right. Well, it's still a single zone that there's still one inside unit and one outside unit. It just both of them were really, really big.
Oh, I see. Okay, I wasn't aware of that. So, yeah. And what? So if you're talking in 9,000, I mean, I think a typical homeowner typical is probably going to go 9 to 18 is going to be in that range. What kind of price differences are between those?
Different companies do it differently. We pass on the actual difference in cost to the customer. So between the 9, 12, and 15, it's only $100 difference. So for example, the 12 is $100 more than the 9, and the 15 is $100 more than the 12. I know other companies do it differently.
All right. I thought it was pretty close. So. All right. We have another caller on the line. It's Jeff from Stonington. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm just wondering if the outdoor unit could be mounted in a cold basement, completely out of the weather.
Actually, that's a common question there about putting the outside unit, say, in a garage or in a basement. But it actually, contrary to what you'd think, it's not a good spot to put it at. The reason being is that when we're moving heat from one place to another, and so if you had the unit in a basement, say, well, you're going to steal all the heat from that basement. And it's going to get really, really cold, you know, down below negative 20 real quick.
Right.
And then suddenly the unit's not producing heat anymore.
I got it. Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, no problem.
There probably are unique situations where somebody has an attached greenhouse or something like that that they don't use in the wintertime. I suppose that might make sense to do something like that?
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, some people, you know, you can put it in like a huge warehouse type thing. You know, there's this big commercial structure there that we put the outside unit in, and that makes sense. But if you have a, you know, it's a smaller space that's enclosed, you're going to steal all that heat real quick.
Mm. And yeah. It's similar to what we said a few minutes ago about the hybrid hot water heater, the heat pump hot water heater. Again, you wouldn't want to put that in a closet because it's probably not going to work, or it's going to freeze the closet.
Right.
But
yeah.
If you've got it in your basement where you've got 50-degree ground all around you, then that works reasonably well. But for the whole house heating, for the air source heat pump, not a good plan.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
What about warranties on these heat pumps and long-term maintenance and longevity of the unit, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so the expected lifespan for these heat pumps is about 15, 20 years. But if installed correctly, much like your refrigerator, they should last, you know, 30, 40 years type thing. The warranty is pretty typical in the industry that as long as you're a qualified installer, that there's a 12-year warranty on the parts, whether it's Mitsubishi, Daikin, or Fujitsu, that tends to be the case. What was the rest?
Maintenance?
Oh, in terms of maintenance, the homeowner maintenance, about once a month or depending, you know, it could be every 3 months, say, you know, depending on how clean your house is or how many animals or whatnot you have, you take the filters out of the inside unit. They're kind of like some screens similar to your dryer, you know, your dryer screens there, and you just get the lint off of that about once a month, say. In terms of professional maintenance, although not required, it is highly recommended, much like your furnace, to have it professionally cleaned every year or every other year. And with that, we basically disassemble the entire inside unit. We attach this plastic bag to it. We have a power sprayer with a flexible wand so we can get in all the different crevices. We use various cleaning solutions and a mold control spray afterwards because mold can accumulate on these air conditioners, you know, when you're air conditioning. And all that black sludge comes down into a bucket that we dump outside, eco-friendly, so of course we can do that. And then we do a similar thing to the outside. So we've heard it definitely makes a huge difference in terms of the capacity, how much heat it can put out, and the efficiency, how much it costs to run. Because, again, these are transferring heat from one place to another, and so if the fins and the coils of the inside unit are covered in stuff, then it's hard to get the heat to transfer. You know, those fins are all covered in stuff, and so you can't move that heat as well. So it does make a big difference.
And what's the so your company actually is somewhat unusual in terms of offering maintenance like that. What kind of price is that for a particular unit?
Yeah. So we specialize in this because, as you're indicating, many companies don't do any sort of service or maintenance. And so that's where we're really focusing. And for the a cleaning of a single-zoned unit, you're looking at $150.
Okay. And frankly, I would suggest to people that they go on the Efficiency Maine website, both to make sure you understand how the rebates work, but also you can actually put in some options in your location and search by a geographic range and look at the most common or the installers out there that are ranked by Efficiency Maine in terms of number of units that they've installed, or actually, I guess, the number of rebates coming back.
Right, within the past 4 months.
Right, and yeah, I was on there last night. In fact, there's 479 companies in the state of Maine that say they install heat pumps. You guys are rated at this present time number six. But I would certainly look at that list. You want somebody relatively local, but you also want somebody who is relatively experienced. We're going to try to squeeze in one more call here. Jerry from Rockland, you are on the air.
Hi, I've got a small single-story ranch that has a forced air system in right now, propane, with a AC unit, a coil that's in the air handling. I would like to go to a heat pump because I want to eliminate any type of chimney due to a remodeling plan that's going to take away the chimney. So I'm trying to decide whether I want to go with a high-efficiency furnace, which would have like a PVC exhaust, or go with the heat pump, but I'm wondering, would the existing A-coil and all of the Freon lines that run to the outside AC unit be able to be reused for the heat pump, or would I have to remove everything? And also, how much is the air handling unit normally to convert it to a forced air system instead of a single area, a zone?
For the first question there, you would have to use a new system. You couldn't reuse what you have there currently.
Okay.
And I didn't quite understand your second question.
Second question is, how much is a air handling unit to connect to my existing ductwork? I'm assuming that instead of having a specific unit that's just to the heat pump, can you run the refrigerant through the A coil? In the ductwork of a regular forced air furnace system?
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is no, that you wouldn't want to do that for an air source heat pump. But if I understood the question, but go ahead, Adam, just make sure.
Yeah, the heat pumps we work with are definitely separate systems, and so they don't tie in any way in what you have currently.
Are there any systems that do that?
I'm sure there are, but I don't know of any particulars.
So okay. you mean a heat pump specifically that would tie into existing ductwork? Is that your question?
Yeah, well, I'm assuming, like, because I have a central air conditioning system that has an A-coil in the air handling part of my furnace. I didn't know if you could just run the refrigerant through that and have that work the same as if it was a regular furnace, only you'd have a fan blowing over the coil into the house.
So at this point, you have a separate AC system that is tied into the heating system.
Right, central air, yep.
Right.
The condenser outdoors with the Freon lines that run in. I have all the power out there and everything, and I just didn't know if whether or not that heat pump system could go into... someone told me that you can get an air handling system for a heat pump that would basically replace your forced air system and be able to use the ductwork, so the cool air and warm air would be, channeled to each room as it would be with a regular forced air system.
Yeah, they do have ducted heat pumps, but those typically, you can hook them up to a ducting system, but they are a little bit limited in terms of how much they can put out, and you do lose quite a bit of efficiency compared to the ductless systems as well. But in terms of any sort of existing system inside, if you had like not just the ducts, but anything that's not associated to the ducts, like the actual system, these use various electronics and boards and whatnot, and so it wouldn't be able to talk to each other type thing. Your inside unit talks to your outside unit, and that's how it determines how to have the refrigerant flow and how to, how much to open the expansion valve and that sort of stuff. So they're definitely separate systems, and so they don't tie into your existing system.
I've actually done projects, Jerry, where we've installed heat pumps that kind of look like an AC unit. That's on the commercial side, really not the homeowner side per se. And in my view, it wouldn't be cost effective to replace the one you've got with that complicated a system. If you put in a mini split, it's going to cover your AC, 99% of your AC needs anyway. So that would be my 2 cents worth on that.
Okay. Well, great. That answered my question. I appreciate that.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
So we're coming to the end here, and our guest has been Adam Barker-Hoyt from MAC Heat Pumps up in Bangor. Thanks for your phone calls. We've covered a lot of ground here and covered heat pumps in considerably more detail than we've done in the past. So stay tuned for Melisandre and Wednesdays on the Wing. My name is Steve Kahl, and this has been Power for the People. Thanks so much.
Hey, we have a few more seconds before we need to go to the break, so let's take a quick look at the weather. Mostly sunny for the rest of the day, high near 63, north winds 7 to 9 miles an hour. Mostly clear tonight with a low around 37, northeast winds 3 to 5. And on Thursday, sunny with a high near 60, north and north winds at about 6 miles an hour. Thursday night clear with a low around 35, calm winds. Sunny with a high near 61 on Friday, calm and becoming south to 5 to 9 miles an hour in the morning. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 47, and that'll do it for your weather.
Support for WERU comes from our listeners and from the Strand Theater in Rockland, presenting Seth Gleer on tour with guest Matt Nakoa, live in concert on Friday, October 13th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and information at rocklandstrand.com or 594-0070.
It was true in 1931 when Duke Ellington and Irving Mills wrote it. And it was true in 1955 when the high priest Thelonious Monk covered it. It's still true today. And if it ain't got that swing, you won't hear it on Jazz Straight Ahead. Hi, I'm Larry. Join me every Wednesday from 6 to 8 for 2 hours of jazz. Just jazz, real jazz. That's Wednesdays from 6 to 8, right here on WERU-FM, 89.9 in Blue Hill, 99.9 in Bangor, and WERU.org on the web.